All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and stealing out of your pocket and bending you over and doing all kinds of weird shit behind your back that you don't approve of, that you find morally objectionable. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker somewhere deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for President of the United States, currently in the race for Governor of Texas. And today I have an awesome guest with me, Control Pew, and he's going to be telling us everything we need to know about 3D printing. This is going to be really awesome. I'm excited about this. This is something that it keeps popping back up in front of me. I mean, I guess because it's everywhere now. But it's really fascinating. So we're going to get into the ins and outs of 3D printing. It's going to be awesome. But before we get started, I want to take a quick minute to ask for your support. Head on over to taxationistheft.info. And help us out by buying some awesome stuff. Help yourself out. Help yourself to some of these amazing 3 by 5 foot flags that you can stick out in front of your house and piss off your HOA. We've got t-shirts that say taxes pay killer cops. Those are really awesome. That's a great conversation starter when you're, you know, walking through Walmart or like the PTA meetings. And we have these really awesome hats and a bunch of other cool stuff. So head on over there and support us. Everything that you do on that site to buy from us or to goes to support us, and it goes to support our counter propaganda campaigns to end taxation around the world and government oppression. And now on to the show. Control Pew, welcome. How's it going?
Pretty well, yourself?
Awesome. Doing pretty good.
Thought I'd just put out a live real quick, let people know we're on.
Nice. Awesome.
Oh,
so good stuff. Yeah, so 3D printing.
Right?
How much of like your home has become 3D printed after you got into this? I could imagine like, you know, oh well, I need a new coffee mug. I'm going to go ahead and just print that.
Right. I my wife gets on my case cuz it keeps spilling out into like the living room and you know, the little dining room and the kitchen and everywhere else, literally every other room in the house. But I try to keep it restricted to just my little office here. But, we inevitably fail. I got gun stuff all over the place. I found a couple detent pins for an AR-15 sitting in my kitchen yesterday. So it's a mess.
Nice. Yeah, and it's like I had a perfect opportunity the other day, actually, because my electric razor broke and there's like this little plastic piece. And I was like, man, I bet you I could 3D print this thing.
Right? Guaranteed.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, man, instead I got to pay like $40 to like buy it from some warehouse, and it's like it fits in a regular envelope.
Right, it falls apart in a week.
Yeah. Assholes.
Yeah.
Sorry,
it keeps the Chinese employed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's going to be really interesting too, because at some point, like I think, you know, I mean, we're already seeing, like, you know, they're starting to 3D print with all kinds of different materials. I know there's some 3D printers that use multiple materials or at least multiple colors of the same material.
Yep.
It's only a matter of time before it's like, you know, when you do your online shopping, you're like, ooh, I need one of these. And like, okay, yeah, we'll 3D print that.
Yeah. There was a time when like the first generation of paper printers were really bad. And now they're, you know, they work more or less. They work a lot better than they used to anyway. And 3D printers are in the same boat. We're on like generation 2. So this is not, you know, we're not all that far along. They're already really good. We're already seeing that multiple material, multiple color iterations. There's a company a few months ago who brought out a full RGB color printer, a 3D printer that prints in all, you can mix all the colors of the rainbow in it on the fly. It's pretty cool. And you know, you can do that with all the materials that they have for it, and we're materials are getting better and better over time. You know, nylons and PLAs and everything else. So it's really we're really still in the early days, and we're doing a lot with it. So, and I'm excited for the next 10 years.
Yeah, it's it. I mean, There was one thing that I found fascinating, because I always, like, I would always play around with these designs, you know, back when I was, like, in shop class. Like, I bet I could make, like, this really awesome engine. I don't know how to use, like, all these machining tools to right. you know, do all that. But I'm like, man, now I'm like, oh, dude, I bet I could totally make that thing with, like, some 3D printed metal parts or, like, a CNC machine or something. And, yep. But, of course, now it's, like, everything's moving to electric cars anyway, so it's like, ugh. I'll never be able right. to beat.
Well, Tesla. I mean, eventually we'll get batteries, but 3D printable batteries. But, you know, it's in all time, all things, right? So, you know, maybe 20 years from now, we'll be able to just hit print and generate a battery. Who really knows? So,
right.
I think about this as like the replicator from Star Trek, and eventually, like, we'll just be able to create whatever, given a model from the internet.
Right. It's got, instead of like picking different materials like plastics and metals, you just have, you've got your protons, your neutrons, and your electrons, and then it just assembles whatever it needs to.
Right. Absolute science fiction.
Yeah. Which is funny. I was watching, what's that show? With all the nerds. I'm terrible with like
Big Bang Theory?
Yes. Big Bang Theory.
Hey.
And one of the things that they were saying was like, well, technically there is no teleportation. It's you're disassembling one and reassembling it somewhere else, which would be true. Mm-hmm. But that's really like the idea of 3D printing. And I'm sure we're going to get to the point where, you know, especially the medical industry is going to want to be able to 3D print organs and things like that.
Oh yeah. Well, hell, they're already doing it. Like, somebody, I saw somebody 3D printed like the sternum for your rib cage earlier this year, which was a weird development for 2020, but that aside, it's organs, bones, blood vessels. Yeah. You know, these things are, you know, skin grafts. These are all already a thing. You know, they're just not very common, but they're there, and the technology is being developed. We're like the first iteration of those, so, you know, give it another 5 years, it'll be, you know, as common as the car. Think about it, in the grand scale of things, like, we do, in less than 100 years, we went from flying's impossible to we're having breakfast in New York, lunch in London, and dinner back in New York again. So, you know, for those who may be younger, that's the Concorde that I'm talking about, which you can't fly anymore. But that was the peak of supersonic flight in less than 100 years. So we're just getting started with 3D printing. Who knows where we're going to be, you know, 10 years right. from now.
Yeah, and probably in 10 years from now, we'll be having lunch on the moon.
Right.
Thanks, Elon.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to be insane. But so... How did you get into 3D printing? Like, what was kind of your first motivation and your first step?
I had always been sort of tangential to 3D printing in the sort of the startup tech space. I watched it as I was going through high school, and I thought it was really interesting, and I was tuned into that sort of technology, that sort of decentralized technology, and I think, I don't know, it resonated with me. I can't quite put my finger on describing it properly, but it resonated with me. It stuck with me, and I kept an eye on it through the years. I saw Deterrence or Defense Distributed do their Liberator video back in 2013. I thought, hey, that's really kind of cool. You can print a gun. And I continued to watch it and watch the space. And finally, I want to say, geez, was it 20? I guess it was only last year. We saw the High Point Parts gets go on sale for $30, and everyone's like, hey, we should print these. This would be cool. It'd be funny. And I bought a kit. Thought, okay, well, no one else is doing it. Why don't I just go for it? And so I started designing, and that was about it. That was, I think, June 2019. Was when that started for me. And I had messed around with CAD and 3D printing before then, but never quite so dedicated to a single industry, I guess.
Right. So you mentioned decentralization. I know, like, when you're, especially when you're printing gun parts, it's like, yeah, I don't need to go do a background check or, you know, any of that stuff to buy gun parts, which is, I mean, that's definitely a huge benefit to it. But I mean, is it like, even without that, right? Like it's a pretty amazing technology. Like, were you like, I don't know what's, I mean, there's a big draw to it, right? There's the ability to, you know, oh, I need this thing. I don't want to order it on Amazon. It's not something that you can go to your local store and order anymore. Like, you know, I don't know. I used to, when I was a kid, I used to go to like Radio Shack and get like little parts and components and things, but it's like, they're only limited to what they have in stock. If you need something like, I don't know, a car part or something, right? You like, mm-hmm. even if you go to your local store, they probably have to order that and then you're waiting for weeks or whatever. And it's, right. It's really interesting that it's, it provides a pretty interesting level of convenience for a pretty large variety of things.
Yeah. I mean, just the notion that you can squeeze out plastic into any shape imaginable is, you know, just on its base doesn't sound all that impressive, but like my entire camera setup here is held together with 3D printed parts, all the bracketing, everything else under the sun. Most of my workshop is held together with 3D printed parts, just because it's, I didn't have to fabricate, I didn't have to spend an hour fabricating this metal bracket. I just printed it. It took me 10 minutes in CAD and like an hour on the printer and it was done. So it's, you know, you can do complex shape, any combination of any shapes in the world, more or less, out of plastic without having to sit there with your hands and make it. And it brings the level of craftsmanship and skill that you have to have with your hands, with equipment, down to almost nothing.
Do you think that kind of cheapens, the do-it-at-home maker, or do you think it gives them an extra step so they're not doing so many mundane things that they're able to spend more time focusing on the more complex issues than?
Well, it's very much the whole jack of all trades argument. I would rather know a lot about everything than master any one thing. And this lets me not have to master, you know, metalworking or woodworking or, you know, something like that in my garage. I'm using a different material, right? So if I need something out of wood, I'm still restricted. But if I have that option, right, I can just go here and a couple hours later, I can have whatever it was I needed. And I can spend that time. I didn't have to sit there for an hour and a half with the, you know, on a mill or a lathe or something and make it. And I could spend that time rather doing something else, focusing on a different part of the problem. So, yeah, no, I think it's, it's not going to help you master any one thing. It's going to let you focus on more things. So it very much enhances that jack of all trades sort of home DIY maker sort of idea.
Right. So you might not be into, I guess, for example, traditionally it might have been like a metal worker who knows everything ins and outs about working with metal and fabricating things. But today you might be a photographer with camera equipment and everything. And like you said, you made your camera rig, that didn't take you, you know, learning an entire other career, an entire other trade, just to be able to make a few parts. You've been able to, you know, as a photographer, you'd be able to improve what you're doing by creating maybe some pieces that you can't even get anywhere because no one's invented that. I know I go through this all the time. I'm like, okay, I need this part. I know exactly what it looks like, and nobody right. makes anything like it. What the hell?
Right. Yeah, you didn't have to take that idea and convey it to someone who knows how to do machining. You could just go into your computer, pull up your CAD software, and draw it. And then you have it, and then you print it. Now it's physical. So right. I don't know, it's a whole different sort of way of solving the problem. You don't have to collaborate. Like, you can still. It can be better if you collaborate. But you don't have to. You're very much more self-sufficient in this, with this.
Right. That's awesome. How difficult was it to learn the actual, like, I guess you said it was CAD software, right?
Yeah. Once you sit down and start messing with it, it's really not difficult. It's, you have to change the way you think a little bit. So it's CAD is very much, you draw a basic shape like a circle, and then you pull the circle into a three-dimensional object like a cylinder, right? And then you can cut other shapes out of that cylinder, and it's that rinsed and repeated 1,000 times to get whatever shape you want. I say that, it sounds difficult. It's not. Just get the software, sit down and start messing with it, and you'll figure it out. In an afternoon, you'll be functional with it. In two or three afternoons, just doing whatever projects you need that come to mind, you'll be pretty fluent in it.
Right. And I'm sure there are like a billion different tutorials all over YouTube.
Right now, the top candidate is Fusion 360. They've got a free license for hobbyists. They've gotten a little on our nerves recently because they decided to take out some of the features for the free license, but they put them back in. Regardless, we're still looking for a better option. But right now, that's the top one, and it's professional grade software, so it's pretty awesome.
Right. Yeah, I'm looking at this now, and now that I'm looking at this, I'm like, oh man! Like one of the examples they have on here, it looks like a little hobby computer box. With like some Ethernet cables and everything, and I'm like, man, I was just planning to order like a one of those enclosure cases for like a hobby electronics project, and I'm like, oh man, now I can just like 3D print this on my own,
right?
You could
customize it anyway. You can put your name on it.
Yeah, because I'm thinking like, okay, I'm gonna get some generic box in whatever size they have, 3x5 or something, and like I'm gonna have a couple circuit boards in there. Like, who knows if they're gonna fit?
right.
Yeah, this is really amazing. And like, and of course, I want to ask the other question. Can you make circuit boards and stuff out of this? Like, how far can you push this?
Yeah, circuit boards, it requires a conductive layer. So there are ways to do it. There are conductive filaments. It's still very much in the unmessed with space on that end. Conductive filaments are still, they're a very niche thing on their own. So maybe.
Right.
Now there have been methods of making your own circuit boards at home since like the 70s, where you just had, it's stuff you can get at the hardware store, bottle of God, I can't even remember now. It's been so long since I've done it.
Yeah, I think I've seen like some kits where it's like, it's almost like a sticker that you could peel off, and it's got the conductive material on top of it, but you're stuck with like whatever shapes come in a pack.
Right. That's the easy way. Like there's a much more in-depth way of doing it where you have, you buy the board itself blank, and then you can etch it. However you want to, you just dip it in acid for a while. And, that's how they used to do it. Like back in the 70s with homebrew computing, right? And 70s and 80s. But yeah, that technology has been around for a while, so it can be done. Can't quite do it with a 3D printer yet. I get a lot of questions about 3D printers with like CNC attachments for, you can swap out the, instead of the melting plastic part of it, you get like a CNC milling bit that moves around. And those you could do a PCB with, but you'd have to, you know, that printer, that particular piece of hardware is significantly more expensive. So we're talking like $1,000-$2,000 to get into that. And it's just not really worthwhile when the old way of doing it is still there and still very viable. Right. So.
Yeah, that's actually interesting. I've been seeing these ads for this. It's like they call it a desk size. It's still kind of big, but it's a water jet type machine.
Yeah, I know. Yep.
Yeah, that thing looks really awesome, but I guess it only cuts like flat materials, flat shapes, but it's still like, I mean,
yeah, you can only do a 2D cut with it, and it's all the way through whatever material you put in there. But yeah, it's super cool. I want one. that. Good God, it's just so much money.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the thing like, oh man, that would be so cool to have. I don't know what I make with it, but like, I totally want it.
Right. My wife saw me to get her one of the laser, the Formlab, and not Formlabs. I forget what company. It's just a laser engraver.
Mm-hmm.
She wants one of those. It's like $3,000. I'm like, oh God. It's more than all of my 3D printers combined.
Yeah, it's nuts, but it's interesting because, like, you know, like going back to talking about like being a metal worker, you know, there's so many different methods for creating things. You can take two pieces of metal and glue them together, weld them together, or you can cut them, or you can bend them. Like, there's like different things, and kind of in that same way, there's like different 3D printers for different things. So it's not always just like printing to build. I guess it's kind of like a positive construction, and then there's the negative construction, like a CNC or a cutter or something. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that there's like all these different types of things. I'm wondering, you know, like, and maybe this is a good business model to get started with. Like it used to be you would go to like Kinko's or something and say like, okay, I need a whole bunch of copies of this. It would be really interesting if there were shops you could go to, like, you know, if Office Depot or whatever, opened this up as like, you know, oh, it's not just copiers anymore. We also have an engraver. We also have a 3D printer. We also have, right, you know, those other things. That would be really interesting to see if that's where we end up.
I want to say UPS store did that. Or maybe it was FedEx. Somebody, some big corporate went and bought a whole bunch of 3D printers and tried to do it. And not sure how well it fared. I haven't heard about them getting a lot of business from it. I haven't heard about it in a while. So
yeah.
I think maybe they went a little too hard too early and realized these weren't like your HP desktop printers. They weren't quite that. That bulletproof yet, so.
Right? Because at the same time, you still got pretty long wait times for some of these things,
right?
Depending on,
there are services that I know. There's one I use kind of frequently for various parts, called like Shapeways, where you can send them your model and they'll print it in a variety of or whatever manufacturing method you ask them for. So, like, I'll do, like, if I need something that's actually made out of metal that's not, you know, the firearm part itself, be clear about that. You can't send them your gun and ask them to make it for you. That'll get you in trouble. But if I needed, like, a bracket that's made out of metal, I'll send it to them, and they'll print it in metal and send it back to me for, you know, 30, 80 bucks, 100 bucks, something.
Yeah, here, additive manufacturing.
Yeah.
That's what they call it. Yeah, I'm looking at their website right now, and they've got, that's pretty insane. I mean, just like, I'm just like drooling over the slideshow they've got here.
Right. And like, yeah, they'll make it out of gold if you ask them to. So.
Oh yeah, here you go. Copper, platinum, yeah. Gold, silver. That's, oh man, I'm getting so many ideas.
Right?
Oh man, this is really amazing. I know we talked earlier. You were already saying like, yeah, I'm gonna have you ordering a 3D printer by the time the show's over.
If you want to go that route, we could do it. I've got it all laid out for you. It's already written.
I mean, like drone parts. Of course, you got to buy the rest of the drone, but. Yeah, no, this stuff is like so interesting. And I was at Anarchon. I was telling you about this in Virginia, and it was really interesting cuz there was a guy there who had basically a 3D printer going in his trunk, and like the whole weekend he was just 3D printing stuff, and he had some Glocks and he had some AR-15s. And
my dude,
It's amazing. And like, but of course some of these things take like several hours. I want to say like the AR-15 lower took like 8 hours to print.
Yep.
Which is pretty insane, but it's like, I don't know. There's still something so cool about like, yeah, but I made it.
Right.
And
I made it in that space right there.
Right. With that little machine. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about this too, because so I guess like when you're creating guns, of course, like you're going to end up sticking gunpowder in there, which is a pretty powerful substance. And we're dealing with plastic, like layered plastic that came from a string, like spaghetti. And it was just like, it's like you took plastic spaghetti and squished it together. How right. strong are these things?
They're not horrible. Well, okay. Let me sort of put, so there's three kinds of guns that we're printing. And I've got some convenient examples right here.
Let's see it.
So this is type one, right? This is a mostly 3D printed gun. Everything in this is 3D printed with the exception of the firing pin, which would be in this little hole right here. But there isn't, because it's for this. This was one I had the guys from DD sign when I was down there in Texas.
Nice.
But anyway, so this, it's entirely plastic. So it takes, you know, one bullet at a time. You load it in, you put the thing back together, you shoot it. And these were prone to exploding because they're not very durable, right? You can get that one shot, but that's it. Generally speaking, there are ways, if you made it properly, you can get 4 or 5, maybe 10, maybe more. But that ceiling is always going to vary a bit, but it's always going to be very low. So we're talking less than 100. This is type one. And there are ways to improve this. You can put like a metal sleeve in here
for the barrel.
I forget what the actual gun term is for the sleeve, but it's a little metal insert. You push it in there, and that'll serve as your like contact surface for the bullet. It'll take most of the stress of firing the bullet itself, and that'll add, you know, it's basically a regular gun at that point. For more or less, and there were models of entirely printed guns like this that came after this that were much better designed. This was just the first one, so it's the one that I have printed for right. nostalgia.
And that one's called the.
Yeah, this one's the Liberator.
Liberator, that's right.
And again, right, it was the first one, and the first of everything is never very good.
Right. Yeah, I remember that one, and it was that's the one that they tried to ban. Sharing the file and all kinds of other stuff. Yeah, that was
the first really one amazing. That got a whole lot of press coverage and all the politicians up in a tizzy. But then we have like type. These are called like these are like part kits guns. So these are the only thing we're printing is the register part, which is this blue bit here. Everything else is purchased from from a gun store, basically. They're all gun parts. These are basically regular guns. These are about as reliable as my regular Glock. So, you know, it's good enough. And then we get into, here's another one, the low point. So they're, on the end of reliability, they're getting up there with like your regular OEM guns, your regular off-the-shelf stuff I bought from the gun store. And then there are hybrids, which I don't have on me. There are things like the FGC9, which are entirely homemade but not entirely printed. So we're giving you instructions to like weld up a bolt out of common materials that you can get from a hardware store. We're giving you instructions to cut rifle or to bore rifle and cut the chamber for like a 9mm barrel with that one. And you're doing all of that in like your home. The barrel especially is interesting because you're doing it with an aquarium pump and salt water, basically. And that's cut and doing all of your internal cutting and rifling and everything else. So it's, and you can do it in an afternoon. So it's really kind of a strange space, but even that one, again, it's getting up there closer to the reliability of a gun you would buy off the shelf. Not quite, because you're still making it home. A lot of it depends on how well you make it.
Right. And I mean, like, you know, some of the ones that you showed earlier, the you know, like there's I saw one that was like a Glock, and the Glock is already like mostly plastic itself.
Right.
And what you're doing is you're adding on the parts on the top, which is like, I think there's like a metal rail that goes into the plastic printed part. And then of course the top slider and the barrel and everything else, is from like a parts kit. So, right. So most of the stress is not necessarily on the plastic itself from what I understand.
Yeah. I can't take this apart at the moment cause I'm dumb, but, yeah, it's catching on something. Anyway, all of the so the rails that go in the Glock prints are DIY. The spec is published along with the model, and you can make them yourself with a little block of aluminum and a file, just a regular, you know, half round file or something, whatever you find at the hardware store. It'll take you a couple hours, maybe an hour, maybe a little more, depending on how dedicated you are to the task, and. You know, I've made a set or two. There are people who are getting them, who are CNCing them now and selling them. So it's just, again, lowering the bar to entry here. Those metal rails are what absorb most of the shock, and it relieves a lot of the stress from the frame. And then, you know, there are better iterations of the frames coming out all the time. People are making and releasing minor improvements to them. And so in a little while, we'll see another one come out here with a different rail spec. It'll be pretty interesting.
Right. Awesome. Yeah. And there was an AR-15 model that I saw, there was something like the, I guess it was printed in a few separate pieces, because when you layer the plastic down, and forgive me if I sound like an idiot, because I'm definitely no expert on this stuff, but when you layer the plastic down, it's stronger in one direction, because that's the direction that the plastic was originally in, like the extruded string, I guess. But then in the other direction, it's layers, so that's not as strong. And so what they were doing was they would print a couple pieces, like one piece would be printed this way with the the fibers going horizontal. And then the other pieces would be printed, and then they'd be bolted on vertically, and maybe with, you know, like a couple of metal parts to hold it together. But that would make that part the grain in the other direction, so that it would be able to handle more stress.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's so when you print, you're stacking two layers of plastic on top of each other. Right. And this seam where they meet is always going to be the weak point. In whatever construction you're doing, that's always that's usually the weakest point where things like to break. So whenever we saw, you know, breaks happen with firearms, it always split at that seam. They took that, they looked at the way stress worked in the AR-15 lower, and they broke it apart and said, we can make this out of 50 parts instead of one solid part. And double the benefit, right? If you break a part, you just have to print one part. It takes an hour as opposed to another 8-hour session of printing. So you get a little bit of modular design that factors in for those sort of stresses that we see. And yeah, it's iteration over time. Slowly awesome. Making everything better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, man, that really is awesome. And like, I don't know, like I'm a coder. So like I take software and like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, something's not working right, let me change a line of code here and it works better. And it's almost like, oh, this is actually kind of the same process we're talking about, just in physical terms instead of code.
Yep.
So now I'm even like, I'm on Amazon right now. No. Yeah, I mean, man, and this stuff is amazing. But I wonder, like, what's the we see, well, of course, in this movement, there's a lot of people who are libertarians, anarchists, agorists, whatever you want to call them, who are interested in doing this for a few reasons. One is the benefit of not having it registered with the government. But also, you know, those people generally see gun ownership the way the Second Amendment intended it, as with the purpose of defending freedom. And we see a lot of stuff going on in the rest of the world, like in Hong Kong, where the government is just totally trying to clamp down on people, where they don't have gun rights and everything else. Has there been any any movement or any attempts to try to use this as, I guess, a means to provide arms for people where they're not generally available for the purpose of defending themselves against their governments?
I mean, I don't know that it would be... I don't know that I would say, like, if anyone's trying to provide arms. My personal philosophy is if you want them, they're here, go make them. It's that whole seize your own liberty, because otherwise you don't quite understand what it means. Sort of idea. That's my personal philosophy. I don't know that anyone else has tried to take a more active role in getting them to getting some to them, or getting them to manufacture them. To be honest, like, I'm a little disappointed in the when I saw the siege at the college where they glued the bricks to the road, and they were throwing like Molotov cocktails at the armored police cars that were coming up. You know, I was a little bit disappointed that there wasn't anything. Like, it was still, even at that level, like a very sort of indirect, like, oh, I'm going to be free, but then not really, like kind of a half measure almost. So I don't know that. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it yet. It's kind of I wish they would have taken the step and claimed their own independence there. But on the same note, maybe they weren't ready for that leap yet. So,
right. Well, and I'm sure it's always, you know, to some degree, there were a couple people who probably would have been, but they understand that most of the rest of the people weren't. And that,
right.
You know, I don't want to be the martar.
Right. It's the same goes for us. And like, look about right now, the ATF went after Q with their honey badgers all over the social media. If you're not a gun person, it's silliness. But I mean, we've all been thinking for a long time, right? The fact that braces exist in the first place is an affront to the Second Amendment as it's written, as like I believe it. Now, I still have braces on my pistols because I don't want to die, right? I don't want to die. I don't want my dog to get shot. Like, those are the stakes. So if I'm going to roll the dice, it's going to be on something vastly more significant than, you know, a brace versus a stock. But I think that's the argument that we're in. Like, we're in a lot of the same boat that they're in, where no one wants to be the first, take the first leap alone, is I think what they're
right
was holding us all back.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, I'm sure they've got the capability. I mean, like, I was like, they just kept blowing my mind every time I would see, you know, what they were doing at these protests, where, you know, the police were firing tear gas at them. And just like, there was this one, they fired the tear gas, they come up with like a road cone, they stick it on top, they pour water down the top of it, which I guess shuts down the gas coming out for long enough that they could pick it up and throw it back at the cops. And I'm like, that's probably like something they learned in their high school chemistry class or something. Our public school sucks out here, but like, it's just like, man, like, you look at that and you're like, you know, like, I mean, okay, so, you know, 3D printing, let's say the government comes around and says, okay, we're going to totally shut down the supply chain for all guns and all ammo, right? 3D printing isn't going to make you any bullets. It's not going to produce any gunpowder. But I'm pretty sure, you know, the type of people who know how to manipulate a gas canister like that are going to be able to get their hands on the right, you know, whatever you need to make gunpowder from scratch. Forgive my ignorance, because I have no idea how difficult that is. Maybe it's like an easy thing.
Yeah, smokeless powder is really complicated, and it's hard to do without blowing your fingers off, especially in small, uncontrolled domestic production. Black powder is really easy. It's three ingredients, and for the sake, like, I won't get you banned by telling you what they are here, but it's three ingredients you can get at most, like Orchlin's or Baumgars or some lawn and garden store, you know.
Oh, wow.
Or yeah, it's, you can mix them together and get a little blender and call it a day. That's black powder. You can do 12 gauge shotgun shells with black powder all day long. Can't do like 9mm with black powder. The weapons just, it gets too dirty too quickly. So yeah, we're working on smokeless. We got people on it, but it's a little more complicated than we can say, and like, we can't publish the instructions and have people mess it up. Like, hey, these don't work. You know, we have to get it to a workable level for the average person to pull off. So it's coming.
that's really awesome. Man, yeah, because I mean that's kind of that's gonna be the final piece to putting the whole thing together, to be able to, you know, not rely on, I don't want to say not rely on the government, but in a way to rely on the government controlled supply chain.
It's government regulation of commerce.
Yeah, I mean, because ultimately, you know, if and God forbid this ever happens, but if the U.S. government ever says, yeah, well, we decided to repeal the Second Amendment and we're going to ban all guns and ammo, you know, the big manufacturers are going to be the first to comply, because, you know, they're going to be like, oh shit, we're out of business, this sucks. So they're going to fight it, they're going to sue, they're going to do whatever they can. But at the end of the day, when they lose, they're going to shut down. There's a 99% chance that they are not going to, you know, load up and surround their building and prevent, you know, the mm-hmm. police or the government from coming to shut down their factory. I don't see that happening.
When you talk about any sort, like, we're talking about like a domestic warfare scenario or any kind of conflict scenario, it's all about controlling geography. And anytime you have an established manufacturing capability somewhere, I mean, all you have to do is control that space. So for a government that's organized, they have, you know, units already established, local PDs, National Guard units, whatever, active duty units. I mean, manufacturing of like wartime material, it's not going to be difficult for someone who's that organized to take control over. Whereas like if the general public were to fight back against that, it would be significantly more difficult because we're not organized. So we'd have to become organized and then stand against it. And by the time we got all that together, like, they've already, you know, secured it and the 10 miles around it. So good luck with your five-man squad trying to get in there and take it back. I think if it did come to that, there would be a significant, like, I don't think the supply chain would suffer for long. I have faith that there are enough people who would say, no, this isn't right, and actually start hanging politicians. If that law came to pass, I feel like that would happen almost immediately, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, you've got more faith in that than I do.
Right?
I don't know, man. People just seem to cave to everything, and I know it's like, there are people who would want to resist, but I feel like a lot of them are either all talk or they're too few and too far apart and you know, not organized. Like you said, they'll want to kind of work in their own way. And
right. I think you have to find a group of people and agree and commonly agree on where that line is, where this is where we're going to stand and resist. And then you all have to have the fortitude to stand on that line and declare that without getting and come to that agreement without getting like arrested by the feds,
right,
or raided or something. And so
that's a really good point too, determining what that line is ahead of time, because I think if you don't, it's like you're already like doing the slippery slope. It's like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, well, okay, yeah, they did that, we didn't like that, but okay, but if they go a little bit further, then we're gonna have a problem. But how much further? Just a little bit. You know, you don't define it, then it's like, then they do the next thing, and it's like, okay, yeah, we didn't like that, but, and it's like, you get stuck in that loop. So I think absolutely, you do need to kind of draw that line, but, you know, the way the government works is, well, if you draw a line, oh, you're an extremist.
Right. Well.
It really is nuts, and it's really a tough position. But ultimately, like I think, you know, we need to see this as what it is. War has been declared on us. We're not the ones declaring war. And we're, you know, really talking about how do we defend ourselves against what's coming. And, you know, not saying that, like, you know, the government's going to kick down every single door and shoot everybody, because obviously that wouldn't benefit anybody. But to understand that the war is not necessarily about, you know, we have this concept, right, that war is like, oh, it's just guns and bombs and killing people. And it's like, no, it's not really. War has always really been about controlling things, whether it's controlling land or controlling people. And you don't need... you don't need guns and bombs to do that anymore. You can do that with media and fear and changing the laws and forcing conformity, and you can do it gradually. And it's, you know, it is like they are attempting to control us. There's no doubt about that. I don't think well, I guess there are some people who don't really believe that, but they are trying to control us, and for all practical purposes, that is a declaration of war. They're attempting to control people who don't want to be controlled, and they're going to use the slippery slope to get there without having to actually pull guns on everybody. I think that's a really important point for everybody to see. And I'm sure I'll probably get banned from Facebook or something for saying that, but whatever.
Yeah. They don't like you.
My soapbox moment.
Right?
Yeah, now that we're totally off the topic of 3D printing.
Yeah. Sorry, I think there are enough guns in circulation in America that no one would ever really need to print a gun here, under most circumstances. Like, we're seeing things now like a shortage, but I don't think anything's going to get too crazy with the sort of tail end of the year and the pandemic.
Right.
Oh
yeah, I'm sure we're already past the countdown of 30 days. It's all going to disappear.
Right. So, I don't know, man. I think there are enough in circulation here that it's not going to be too big of a problem. I would really like to see. I know there are several examples of the FGC9 done internationally, that I'm really kind of amused by. I want to see more of those cropping up, just to sort of end the notion of gun control globally. So free people, free choices. Let them do what they want.
Right. You know? So aside from guns, what's the coolest thing that you've printed?
Oh God. I don't know. Like.
You're like, I have this one thing, but I can't tell you about it.
Right. No. Well, okay. So. Ugh. Oh, shit. Broken. No. So, not a gun. The Hush Puppy, right? This is my suppressor for 9mm that I was shooting at the Bitcoin convention the other day.
Wow.
But, yeah, technically not a gun. So, it works. Yeah, it's like a buck at the hardware store, everything else printed, and, you know, it slaps on the end of a gun and makes you hearing safe. So I was intrigued by that idea. I thought I'd run one off. It worked pretty well. There's some video up of it on my social media pages, but yeah.
Nice.
I think that's the coolest thing I printed. It's hard to top guns, man. Guns are just sort of default cool, I think. I'm a gun guy, so, you know. And outside of that, it's really, I print a lot of bracketing for camera equipment. Like, I'm filming a lot and photographing a lot of stuff. So, you know, camera tripod heads and brackets for lighting and everything else, printing a lot of that. So, I don't know. I don't really get to print a lot of not gun cool stuff.
Nice. Yeah. Well, man, and I'm, shit, I'm already, I mean, I'm thinking, we have a lot of very similar interests.
Right.
I'm scared, of course, so I'm down in Mexico most of the time.
Right.
I'm a little bit scared about printing something down here, because I don't know what the consequences are. But at the same time, I don't think, like, in the U.S., I know if you get caught with an illegal firearm, and of course, that's, you know, just in the wrong state, that's any gun. Like in California, if you have a gun in your car and it's not registered, like you're going to prison for 50 years.
Kind of.
Yeah, more or less.
So there are laws called I forgot what it was called. It's like the Traveler's Protection Act, where if you're traveling through a place where your gun isn't, where you're not allowed to have this particular gun, and you secure it properly in your trunk or whatever in a lockbox, then you're fine. Technically speaking, now the cops can still fuck with you because you know they're cops. But
if you say the wrong thing, you're screwed.
Right. Well, maybe. just don't ever be like your destination is always like Maine or something. You know, you're going far away and you're driving the whole way. So, you know, beyond that, they don't really need to know. It's not a huge thing. But yeah, a lot of it depends. There are no restrictions federally on making your own firearm, with the exception of National Firearms Act prohibited items. So that's a rifle under 16 inches, a shotgun under 18 inches, or a firearm under 26 inches overall length that's not a handgun. So,
and full auto, right?
And machine guns, yes. Aside from that, you're generally pretty okay. And if you like, you have there. We get into a little bit of legal thing where you have to know about the law that you're breaking. So if you don't know that it's a law and you're informed that it's a law, and then you're like, oh my God, and you destroy it, then you're probably going to be okay. With a grain of salt, your local prosecution may think differently, but that's sort of the general consensus in this sort of DIY experimental realm. Yeah,
but then there's also possession in certain places, right? Like if you have it in your car and it's, I mean, if you're illegally carrying it concealed, where yeah, that's not allowed.
It gets a lot of it's knowing your local business, and if you're not local, you know, it's your own judgment kind of thing.
Right, because if nobody sees it, and nobody notices it, and nobody cares, then.
Right. No, I carry everywhere I go, with the exception of like one or two places. Like if I go to my kid's school for an event, right, I'm not carrying because, you know, that's clearly not good. It's for an event. I'm going to be there for a while. It's just a long exposure window. Right. If I'm going to like a Hardee's or something and they're like, oh, you can't have a gun in here because they put a sticker on the door, I don't care, you know. Yeah, it gets a lot of weird. Generally, it's just up to your judgment. Go with it. If someone stops you, they're, you know, if someone calls the cops, right, like the question's going to be asked, well, is he waving it around like a lunatic shooting at people? Or does he just, like, is a holster, does he chill? Right. And it's going to be readily apparent to whoever's coming. Like, okay, it's just a dude with a gun, you know, and the cops, and if you handle it properly, it'll be fine. Like, I've had the cops called on me once because my shirt lifted, rode up over the gun and I wasn't supposed to have it. And, you know, the cops came and talked to me and it was a chill exchange. There wasn't any craziness. Like, hey, you have a gun? I'm like, yeah, I do.
Right. I'm not, fuck you. I'm not going to answer any of your fucking questions.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, don't be.
Right. Well, but you bring up a good point too. Like if somebody calls the cops, you reminded me of a friend of mine in California, who, and you know, he's fucking gun nuts. I don't know how he gets all that stuff in California, but it's all totally legal. But I guess his neighbors knew that he had those, and for some strange reason, they got into like a really, really stupid fight over a parking space or something. And the guys were drinking, so they called the cops, and they said that my friend was brandishing one of his firearms, and so they showed up with a helicopter and like 50 cops and like just totally just went crazy. And then while they had my friend and his grandfather in the back of the police car, I think they broke his grandfather's arm. Like one of the guys, that's when they went to the guys and said, yeah, so he was out here waving his gun around. He's like, well, no, he wasn't really. We kind of made that part up. And And so they were like, oh, great. And you know, and that was
Did they go to jail?
No, nobody went to jail. What? Which you would think, like, you know, filing a false police report. And like,
filing a false police report that resulted in injury. Like, that's basically assault by proxy, I guess.
I mean, that's the whole.
I feel like he should have been able to shoot one of them in the knee just to even things out.
Yeah, it's interesting, but like that, I used this in a podcast like 2 weeks ago, and I know I'm sure there's like a case law or something associated with it, but I need to find it. It's if you rob a bank with, like, you know, empty guns, whatever. But the security guard tries to shoot you to stop you, and he ends up hitting an innocent bystander. That's your fault, because you created the whole criminal situation that was going down, that ended up with shots being fired and ended up in an innocent person being killed. And so yeah, to your point, that's kind of the same thing. I would think, but you know, it's, who knows? Government's going to prosecute who they want to prosecute, not who we want them to.
Right. This is why I advocate against big cities. It's just, there's too many people and everyone just turns into an asshole.
Yeah.
So move out, move to a smaller town, get to know your neighbors, drink, share a beer with them every now and again. Don't be a cunt.
Yeah. Don't be a cunt. Words of wisdom.
Right.
Absolutely. So we're actually at the end of the show, but I want to give you an opportunity to plug anything you want to plug, any projects you're working on, your YouTube channel. Go
sure.
for it.
I am at Control Q everywhere on the internet for now, until they start banning me. We're starting doing more stuff on YouTube with video and having fun there. So come check it out. Website is controlq.com. If I happen to get banned, that's where you find me. I publish gun stuff, and you'll be able to find everything you need to know about 3D printing and firearms, especially if you go to theguide.controlq.com. This is our direct line to the Getting Started Guide. It's got links to what printers to buy, what upgrades to get, and, you know, how to set up your printer to get good, reliable prints and not blow your hands off.
Awesome. I'm going to go look into that right now, actually, and see what your recommendations are for printers.
Right. You want to do an extended one where we go and start doing the Amazon checkout?
Well, let me here, I'm going to turn this into a screen share real quick.
All right.
Oh, this is so bad.
Let me put it this way. The printer is less than $200. All the upgrades are less than $100. And I think they might have done, let me go. Let me look and see if they have an upgraded one. It's just out of the box. It'll save you some time.
All right. I'm going to throw this up on the screen. All right. So this is the website, guys. If you're listening on the podcast, you probably want to tune out now, because you're not going to be able to see this, of course.
Are you sharing with me?
No, actually you won't be able to see it. Actually, then okay. Here, let me see. Can I? Ooh, that probably wasn't good, but okay.
Well, I mean, you didn't have anything, you know, questionable, so.
Well, I mean, oh, can you see this?
Yeah.
Okay. That's weird. It doesn't have the green box around it that I usually have.
Nice.
Okay, so let's see. So I'm on your complete getting started guide.
Yep. So 0 is just an introduction. 1 starts with the printer. 2 will get you set up with the printer, and so on and so forth.
Now, do I have to worry about, like, I mean, I guess, yeah, Ender 3. I've heard about this one. This is supposed to be a good one.
Yep.
Do I have to worry about, like, people selling, like, knockoffs? Like, if I find one on, like, I mean, is there like an official seller of this?
Yeah, Creality is the company that makes it. Comgrow is a knockoff Ender 3. It's just about the same. It's basically the same. I have one of I have one or two of them, and they haven't given me any grief. So they run the same resolution and quality as my my Creality one does.
This is giving me Mexican prices because I'm in Mexico.
Oh, nice.
And for anybody listening, I'm not planning on printing guns with this, just so you know.
Definitely no guns.
Because I still don't know what the laws are about guns. I mean, like, I know you can get them legally here. It's just a huge process. I think you have to be a citizen, which I'm not.
Isn't there only one gun store in Mexico?
Yeah, and it's, like, owned by the military. Right. But yeah, like, I don't know.
Maybe you,
like,
should just join the cartels.
Can you make your own? Well, and that's the other thing, too. Like, I'm pretty sure I could go to my local police and say, hey, I want a black market gun. Can you hook me up? And they'll say, sure. But again, it comes down to, okay, what's the actual risk of getting caught? That's
yeah. I don't think you're able to make one in Mexico legally. I don't know what the penalty is for making one.
Yeah, so I need to look at that.
I guess I'm looking at Amazon. I'm looking for an Ender 3 Pro, which is going to be a little more upgraded. It'll have a silent board in it already. Build surface should be glass, which is one of the upgrades that we recommend. It's a little more expensive than your basic Ender 3. That's $170-$200 bucks. The Pro will be about $230-$240.
And
but if you don't want to spend the time putting the upgrades in yourself, then spend a little more money and you can get it from the factory.
What about one of these multicolored ones? Because that's kind of something I'd like to do, is probably print some taxation theft swag out of this that's got black and yellow in it.
Well, there's a couple ways you can do it. The first is you print the black, and then you can, like, you have the model. And then at a certain height, when you go into the slicer to cut it into the layers that you need to print, you can specify at this height pause, and you can manually swap the colors. If you want to get into like a dual color printer, you can buy a hot end for that. It's got, and we don't have a guide up for that yet. But they do make one that'll let you do that on the fly. Otherwise, like, one for the factory is going to be about $1,000 to $2,000 bucks, just to get that feature added in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a significant hike there.
Yeah. But I mean, that totally makes sense that, you know, I can imagine, especially the way I've got I'm totally picturing my logo right now. The way I've got it laid out is like, I could totally print it in two pieces and, or, you know, like you said, print it and then swap it. And then with the second one, because I guess the way it's printed, I guess the assumption is that your bottom layer is going to already start to be cooling down and drying by the time the next layer goes on top of it. So that shouldn't prevent it from having the same sort of adhesion, right?
Nope. Man. Nope, you shouldn't see any issues there. But yeah, I am getting one of those dual color hot ends. So when I get one in, I'll shoot you a note and we'll.
Awesome. When you say a hot end, that's basically just the part that melts it, right?
Yeah, under that fan where your cursor is, that's the part that heats up and melts the filament. And then, like, so what I was talking about, the dual hot end, the dual feed extruder that I was looking at for the two color stuff, it'll have two of those white tubes going into it. For two different filaments, and then they'll mix in that hot end and come out. So
I see.
Yeah, it's a little more complicated in the system, but the upgrade can be done for like $100 to the Ender 3. Yeah.
And then we've got the CR10.
Yep.
Which I guess is the big beast.
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger. I forget exactly what the dimensions of it are. But we're I think 400 millimeters is or 350 by 400. I'm not entirely sure. It's a little bit bigger than the Ender 3. You can fit a little bit more on there. in the volume. And that's really the big limitation of the Ender 3 is like the print space itself. Most of the stuff that my community does is based around the Ender 3 bed, though, so you shouldn't have any restrictions using it.
Awesome. Well, I have been thinking about this. I'm definitely going to look into this. Maybe by next week I'll make a decision.
Cool. Well, shoot me a line. You know where to find me.
Awesome. All right. Well, to everybody listening, again, thank you so much for listening to the show. If you're watching this on YouTube or Facebook, I'm like thinking about printers, so I can't even think about what I'm trying to say here. If you're watching this on YouTube or Facebook, make sure to like and share and subscribe and comment, because we're up against the algorithms on this one. They already hate us just because we say taxation is theft. If you're listening to this on the podcast, or if you'd like to listen to this as a podcast, you can find this wherever you find your favorite podcasts. We're all over the place. And of course, head on over to taxationistheft.info and get some really awesome Taxation is Theft swag. And I will see you guys next time. Taxation is Theft.